They're always the most difficult shmooze to give right before Rosh Hashanah. And the reason why is because so many people come in with a view on Rosh Hashanah, which is just this, a view that really, it doesn't allow them to understand the Chag properly. I got two emails this week about people who are not doing so well from KiteWise, who wrote to me that they don't know what to do on Rosh Hashanah, and they don't understand how can they daven for their lives. I don't believe that God is really going to take my life away this year, so why should I daven for it in the first place if I don't believe in it? And the truth is, they're right. Well, all of a sudden, one day, you should just get up one day and just say, like, oh, you know what, I better daven for my life because I'm going to die. Well, what does that mean? Well, what does that mean? What does the whole they mean? So, to introduce this idea, I'm going to give a story that everybody knows. You've all heard this story in some way, shape, or form. You either read it in a Pesach Chromebook, or you heard it from somebody who knew it from somebody. It's a famous story. It's a rabbi story, so it's out there. But everyone knows the famous story of the guy who lived in Texas, a Rav, who is a rabbi of a shul in Texas, who a person came to him who had no shaykhus, absolutely no shaykhus to this Rav, to this community, to anything. And he walked in, and he sat down with the rabbi for a little bit, talked to him for maybe 15, 20 minutes. I said, thank you, rabbi, I really appreciate this. And then took a checkbook out, wrote out a check for a couple thousand dollars, handed it over to the rabbi. The rabbi's a little shocked. He's just met this guy. He has no idea. He's never seen this person before. So all of a sudden, this guy's going to give him a check for $3,000, $5,000. Where did this come from? So he asked him, what happened? Where did this come from that you're all of a sudden giving me this check? So the man said, well, listen, I was just in Eretz Yisrael. And we're talking about a guy. We're talking about a Texan. We're talking the large hat and the boots and the big belt and, you know, everything. And he said, I was in the old city and I visited the Kotel. And when I went to the Kotel, I saw that there was a guy davening there, a chassid, that was sitting there davening by the Kotel, and I've never seen a person daven like that in my life. Never seen a person pray to God the way that this person prayed to God. And he was chuckling, and he was so into it, and he was having a conversation. You could tell that he was connecting with his Creator. I've never seen such a connection before. I've never seen somebody have that feeling, that argasha. So I said that when I get back to Texas, I'm going to give a donation to the shul that this person would daven at. So I came back to Texas, and I asked around. I said, where would that guy have davened? If he was in Texas, where would he go? And they pointed out your shul, Rabbi. They said that your shul is the place where he would have davened. So I decided that I'm going to give you a donation, you know, for that man in Eretz Yisrael. So the Rav who told over the story, the Rav was at a convention, I don't remember if it was the Aguda convention, whatever it was, but he told over the story, and he said, can you imagine, when this chassid goes up to Shemayim after 120 years, he goes up to Shemayim, and they lift off all his mitzvot and everything he's done and all the different things. And I said, oh yeah, and there was a $5,000 donation to a show in Texas in your honor. The guy's like, Texas? What's Texas? He's never heard of the place before. He's definitely never been there. Man has never, no shaykhus to Texas whatsoever. So what does that mean? How is there a $5,000 donation? The answer was that this guy saw you and ended up making the donation, and that went on your record, on your permanent record in Shemayim, and you ended up getting reward for it, even though you had no idea that had happened. No clue. Absolutely no idea, but you still get a chelik and olahava for it. You get a chelik, there's something there for you, you get rewarded for it, there's an unbelievable amount of scar just for being there. Just for being there. That's the most unbelievable thing. We never think about this. We never think about this. But it's scary that our acts literally determine what happens in the universe. It literally can determine what happens throughout the world without us even realizing it, without us knowing what we did. No one thinks when they're asleep in their bed in the morning that if I don't get up for chakras, I'm going to cause a hurricane in Southeast Asia. Nobody thinks that way. Nobody thinks that way. If you did, you would probably get up. You'll probably get up, but you don't think that way. You don't think about stuff like that. Nor do they believe that if you move, get up, and you learn during Seder, and you make a Chiddush, that Chiddush allows for an entire nation to have enough rain to have grain for their fields. And that's what ends up happening. That you literally fed an entire nation of people. Nobody thinks that way. From one Chiddush that you were able to come up with in morning Seder. But it's true. Both of those things are true. You're able to create, you're able to destroy, literally worlds, by doing or not doing mitzvahs. That's the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu set up the world. And it seems almost like it's crazy. And even if you don't think that globally, even if you don't want to use it in that way, because it's not politically correct, and it's not right to think that we're the ones in charge of the world and that we're doing everything. Even if you don't want to say it that way, the concept of Bishvili Nivra Olam, that the world was created for me, and that the entire world runs on what I do or what I don't do, is not just a fun concept that you get to bring up at parties. It's a real idea. Bishvili Nivra Olam. Literally, the whole world is running as if it's just for me, and if I mess up, the world can be destroyed, and if I do good, then everything can go up. You can determine the entire fate of the world from you, just from you, without even realizing it. The Brit Rav used to say, and a pasuk in this week's parsha, and I've said this out in Shmuz before, it's just, it bears repeating every time. Hatsur tamim palo, he called the rakav mishpat. That the rock, referring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, every one of his ways is perfect. He called the rakav mishpat, because all of his ways, everything he does, is mishpat, is a judgment. Now, I was just sitting at lunch, and a guy came up to me and asked me question after question about how could it be that there's so many different opinions in Torah and things like this, and it's just, how could it be that God knows what I'm about to do, and yet I'm having bechira? If God knows what I'm going to do, how could there be bechira? How could it be that I'm making the real decisions when God really has already looked into the future and saw what's there? They're solid questions, but personally, on a personal level, I've always thought that they were silly questions to begin with. At the time when I make a decision to bench or not to bench, to make a bracha or not to make a bracha, I have no idea what HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows or doesn't know. I decide whether I make a bracha or not. I'm not being influenced by anyone. That's me that's making that decision. I've never liked it, but let's get it a little bit further. A guy steals $10,000. He gets caught. He's thrown in jail. Now, it makes sense that he's thrown in jail. I guess the punishment befits the crime, right? It's more of a white-collar crime, but regardless, he ended up getting, stole $10,000, so he gets to be thrown in jail. It's his ownish. But the judge never takes into account the other people there. There's a wife, and there's kids. The wife now is going to be in debt, because of the $10,000 that was lost from the husband, except in the fact that the main breadwinner of the family is not there anymore. The kids are going to be affected now that their father is in jail. They don't have a father figure at home. Not always are they going to have a ride to soccer practice, right? They're going to be made fun of in school, and they're going to have to face things, and it's going to be probably they're going to get into fights, and it's likely that they're going to start a life of crime on their own. I mean, the statistics are there that if your father ends up going to jail, it's likely that the kids are going to have some type of issue as they grow older, so it's going to be something like that. See, nobody is thinking about the family. The amount of the family of this guy who no longer have a son, brother, whoever it is, right, to hang out with or to go over to or to give them a birthday present. Anything like that. You don't have any of that. Somebody's got to give tzedakah to the wife of this guy for her to be able to go on. So somebody just lost out on money, and because that guy gave money to this family, some other family that could have gotten that tzedakah didn't end up getting that tzedakah. So we're looking all around here. I mean, if you want to look into the real global thing, everyone lost, I don't know, maybe an eighth of a penny in their taxes to pay for this guy's jail cell. You just lost a little bit more money because now you're paying for another guy to go to jail. Every single person lost out on because of that. But the judge doesn't take that into account. The judge takes his gavel, he looks at the guy, says guilty or innocent, and if he's guilty, he's guilty. I don't care about the other people involved. It doesn't matter, says the judge, what the wife is or the kids or anybody else. There is no lawyer in the world that gets up there and says, sure, this guy sinned, but should the other guys be punished? Should everyone else be punished? Nobody thinks that way. Nobody does. It's just this guy deserves a punishment, he gets his punishment, that's that. But a Kadosh Baruch Hu's mishpat takes everything into account. It's not just this guy and this guy's family, and not just this guy's kids. A Kadosh Baruch Hu globally looks through the entire world and says, if this guy is punished, the entire world is affected. And it's true. You literally can have millions of people being affected by one guy going to jail. So when a Kadosh Baruch Hu decides on Rosh Hashanah that this guy's going to jail, it's not one man's judgment that's allowing this guy going to jail. It's not one man's judgment for a person to die. It can't be. Because other people don't deserve to have that death happen. If a person dies, if a person goes to jail, if a person has anything happen to him, good or bad, that means the entire world needed that. The entire world was judged this way or that way. See, we think of it as, well, what's the difference? Do I really think I'm going to die? You're right. You probably won't die this year. The statistics are out there. You are under the age of 50. Most of you guys are not smokers. You're probably not going to die, right? If you don't have those issues, you're probably not going to die this year. There are always accidents. There are always issues. There's always something that can happen, but you're probably not. But that's not the point. You're not talking about death for you, a microcosm of the world in which you're dying and that's it. We're looking at everything here. There is a massive judgment taking place. And there's so many details. I will highly doubt that there's a single computer in the world that can take all of these cheshbonos into account and make a judgment based on it. I don't think there's any way that you could literally take every single person and say, well, did he deserve to lose a quarter of a penny and a quarter of a penny and a quarter of a penny? How in the world could you figure that out? How much money people are going to lose because one guy goes to jail, and how much pain these people have to be in because this person's in jail? There's no way to do it. No way to do it. There's no algorithm. There's no theory. There's nothing. Because it's too much. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu does it every year. And not just every year. Every day. Because cheshbonos can be switched. And every hour. And that's the machlokas in Rosh Hashanah. How often HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows the system to be rebooted. Is it rebooted once a year? Is it rebooted once a month? Is it rebooted once a week? Once a day? Once an hour? What happens? How does it work exactly? The honest truth is you're not davening for your life on Rosh Hashanah. It's not what you're doing. That's really not what Rosh Hashanah is all about. It's not about you at all. It's not about any individual, or really, or your family, or the Jewish people. That's not what Rosh Hashanah is all about. It never was. It's the way that you start to get involved because you see Unasana Tokef and you think life and death. But really, the tefillos and Rosh Hashanah have no shaychus to you. There's no bidui. There's no slach lanu avinu ki chatanu. There's nothing of that. It's all malchus. The sole purpose of Rosh Hashanah, the only reason why we're davening, the only thing we're saying all day long is we're asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to become king. We're being mamlechim. We are making his sovereignty over the entire world. We are proclaiming it. We're the ones, no one else in the world, but we're the ones invited to the inauguration. We get to go to the ball. We get to watch the crown being put on top of his head. We're the ones who say out loud, Yetzi HaMelech. That's the job of what we're doing over here. And it's amazing because not everybody gets invited. And you don't even know why you were invited. You have no clue. You just got the invitation in the mail and you pick it up and you say, oh my gosh, I was invited. I get to go to the coronation of the king. I get to be the one who calls out loud to Siamela. The king is going to look in the crowd. He's going to see me. And there's not too many people out there. He hasn't told that many people that he's having this brand new coronation. The ikkar behind the entire day is to show HaKadosh Baruch Hu that He is King. He makes all decisions. He decides what's going to be. And that's it. On this day, you're not guaranteed anything. You're not granted even clemency. This is not a point to say, oh please, oh King, save me. You don't do that at an inauguration. You don't do that when he's being made king at a coronation. That's not what you do. You don't go up to the king. This is his day, not your day. It has nothing to do with you. It's his day. So you allow the king to be the king, and you step back, and you allow the king to have his moment. To have his moment. But during that day, you are granted a few seconds of his time. And a few seconds of his time means you're allowed to say over whatever you want in front of the king. You're given, I guess what you say, an audience with the king on his coronation day. And there's nothing greater than that. The president does not allow for such things when he becomes president. He's busy. He's becoming the president. But the king wants everyone to know, you have a chance. There's something you can tell me. So tell me whatever you want. I'm giving you the ability to say the right things. Now when you stand before him, and you're looking as if the king is in front of you. And you should really have that picture in your mind, not as a picture of God, because that'll be like an old man with a white beard and a big white robe, maybe like a little sash. That's not what you want to picture. Picture a throne. Picture a huge throne in front of your head, in front of your eyes. Picture it right there in front of you, and allow it to be with a picture of a submikdash, if that's easy enough for you, but a throne, a massive throne. And you get to talk. Now, I don't know if anybody's seen these speeches that are said over, either in front of a king or by certain people. You don't ad lib a speech in front of a king. You just don't do that. How could you not practice? How could you not have speech writers writing up what you want to say to the king? You get one chance for the whole year. One chance to give your two cents on why you think you were invited and why you believe he's the king and why it's so great for the world to exist. You're given that. So you need speech writers. That's chazal. The Anshei Knesset HaGedola set up a speech for you. It's a massive speech, and you need introductions for this speech. You can't just get into it. There's praise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu mentioned inside here. There's an idea of the Mamlek HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the actual idea of where it comes. Here's where we see it at HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu and giving a little bit at the end to say, thank you HaKadosh Baruch Hu for allowing me to be here. I appreciate it, and that's it. And at the very, very, very end of your speech, at the very end, when you've said what you needed to say, at the whole point of Rosh Hashanah is done. You are mamlechim. You got your audience with them. Not only once, but twice. Maybe even three times on that day. You're allowed to sit there and you're allowed to say something, and then at the very, very end, now you can ad-lib. But I would suggest, humbly suggest, don't. Have something prepared. You're getting up to the second Yule Ratzon. Right before you're about to take your three steps back, and you're done with your meeting with the king. It's all over. You're taking, you're about to do it. You say, you're right up, you say your pasuk, right? Sarah Matzok Matsuni Mitzosefa Shashuoi for myself. My name is Svi, right? So you say, Sarah Matzok Matsuni Mitzosefa Shashuoi. Now, you better have a piece of paper open in front of you. And on this piece of paper, you say over your part in this whole system. Let me tell you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is the reason why I feel that I'm here. Why I feel that I should be part of your cabinet. And why I feel that I am in fact an integral component in your system that is the world. You need me in the world, Hashem. And I know what I can do to create a Kiddush Hashem, to be mamalch you not just on this day, but every single day, and further the world along the path of perfection. I feel that I'm needed, and I want you to feel that I'm needed. So that it's not just that I have to be here because of someone else. I'm here because I need to be here. This is not the time to ask requests. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if I'm here, and my plan is to be mamalch you, and I have a plan, I have an idea. I have something that I feel I can do that no one else in the world can do. It's only me. And I have this. This is what I can do. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in order for that to happen, I need my wife. I need my kids. I need my parents. I need my brothers and my sister-in-laws. I need my nephews and my nieces. I need Talmidim. I need Rebbeim. I need my friends. I need Parnassah. Kadosh Baruch Hu, I need what I need. You're getting into it. And all of a sudden you start realizing, you know what? I don't mean to ask for this. It's just automatic. It comes with the territories. If I'm going to say to the king, and I have this audience, and I'm there anyway, and I already gave my speech, and I'm allowed to add with a few lines, you better believe I'm going to add on a couple things that I could really use. I'm not going to be crazy, because again, a coronation is not the time. Hey God, can I have $1 million? $1 million does not help me, nor hinder me, in my plans for this upcoming year. Well, it might hinder me. I'm not expecting to get $1 million, so if I get $1 million and all of a sudden it changes my whole system, I won't be able to learn as well. I won't be able to do most of the things. I'm going to spend a lot more time with Mishulachim than I used to. So that's going to be a lot of interest. It's going to be a different world for me. That is. That's a different world. Maybe I'm going to decide after that, I just want $1 million. You know what? Why should I be a mashgiach in Skokie Yeshiva? Why should I just sit and learn all day long? Well, what's your plan? Is that your plan? Your plan is to learn all day long? Is that how you're going to further Kiddush Hashem throughout the world? If that's your plan, you better not do that. That's against everything. Then I curse Baruch Hu for sure. Can't do anything like that for you, and he won't. Because that'll destroy everything you had as your plan. So what do you need? What do you need? You know what, HaKadosh Baruch Hu? I could use an extra $20,000. That'd be nice. If I ended up getting that. If I got that, then I make sure that I have this and I have that and everything like that. So ask for it. But you ask for it within the context of a plan. And don't just say it as like, oh, I guess, and figure it out. Do it now. Have a piece of paper on you. Write it down. I always have an index card on me and have written down on there, this is what I'm asking for. And if at the end of my long speech, which is our Shmona Esrei, the end of the long speech, I do it after Shacharit, I do it after Musaf, I do it after Mincha, and I ask for different things every time. Marv is a different issue, but that's another issue altogether. But I do it after every time, and there's something else, something added, an addition that I add on, and you say, this is my plan. Here's who I am, this is what I can do, and I know you need me. So allow me to live this year. Not just live. I mean live this year. Allow me to live a life that you know I can do and I'm going to be make you proud. I'm going to make you sit back and say, this is the reason why the world exists. Because of me. Because I can do this and therefore everybody else can be here in this world. Make it count. You ever heard of an elevator pitch? An elevator pitch? So an elevator pitch is used in business all the time. You have to be able to put together a proposal that you could say over in less than a minute and a half. If you happen to be in an elevator with the CEO of the company and you want to make a sale or you want him to hire you or whatever it is, you have a minute and a half to pitch your idea, your competence. Your sheet should be an elevator pitch. It should be an elevator pitch. Keep it to a minute and a half and 2 minutes. Obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is all the time in the world. But don't get bogged down by the little nitty-gritty details that don't need to be there on His day. Because it's not about you, it's about Him. And if it's His day, and that's what you're doing, forget about everything else. Say over what you know needs to be said for you and nothing else. Get a minute and a half, 2 minutes down, and make sure that you have it down. That you have it. Practice it. You don't want to stutter when it boils down to it and you've got the CEO in the elevator. You want to be able to say it. Have it sitting there in your sitter. You don't want to close your sitter and have it on the side. Oh, I forgot it over there. And like, pick it up from behind you. Have the thing right there ready in your sitter, right by a Lokaina store. Have it sitting right there inside and get ready for it. Get ready. Because you need to say something. If you want a real relationship, and I can promise you that this is true, you want a real relationship with the Kaddish Baruch Hu, you want to feel like when you daven, it's heard, you have to add something on and make it yours. To say what Chazal has given us with Anshei Knesset Gedolah is amazing. It's unbelievable when we start to learn the words of what we're saying in Shemoneh Esrei and realize the thousands of pshatim that they had every single